Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a special episode of Hearts of LNP, brought to you by Late Night Poets at altpoetry.com. Tonight, I want to invite you to come sit beside the fires and warm the cold from your bones, and that we may also warm our hearts with the memories of Christmas past, the joys of the day that we cherish a bit more this time of year. And as you voyage out this week, I also want to remind you that this whole week, the group is going to be hosting shows on a variety of topics that gets to celebrate this time of year and all the joys, warmth, and memories that come with it. And if you've enjoyed listening to us, I also want to encourage you to go on Amazon and check out our anthologies. They boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. Now, come, join me by the fireside, to recant fond memories, perhaps to hang an ornament upon our tree, or to light a candle to guide a loved one back home to the warmth that we find surrounded by family and friends. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. And I know that joining me tonight, at least for now, I have Pam. How are you doing, Pam?
Oh, I'm doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe some other cool poets, and, you know, just really getting into this Christmas spirit and people's memories. And, you know, I think it's going to be just absolutely a wonderful show tonight.
Oh, I'm definitely excited about it. When I was thinking, what really kind of inspired this, I guess, this show for me, was that I was hanging Christmas ornaments on my Christmas tree. And actually, last year, Captain B and Neutron Bomb did an old Victorian Christmas-themed show this time of week. And I remember I actually wrote a piece about how ornaments are each their own memories. So while hanging my ornaments on my tree, I reminisced upon those memories. And even when I was visiting my sister over Thanksgiving, seeing her ornaments and reminiscing them, it really just solidified how full this time of year is. And so I thought it'd be really fun to kind of think about that and see where all of that really kind of went. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited for the poets that wrote in, and of course, anyone else that wants to join us or add a piece is always welcome to. Our show number, for those that are not on All Poetry, is going to be 657-383-0024. And please know that we always love having people call in to share their thoughts, share their works, and perhaps even read a few other poets. So I'm most excited about tonight. And so with that, I'm going to get us started with a piece by Sam Sampson. And it's called The One with the Bazooka. And I'll give this one a read. The One with the Bazooka by Sam Sampson. I hadn't seen my grandfather in ages, moved so far away that it was hard, tree on the porch where I played with green army men as a child. Oh, those summer wars we fought in those bygone days. So here we are to set up that tree one last time. Grandfather would pass 2 weeks later, yet for now, we would trim that tree, and there in the bottom of the box, one lone green army man, the one with the bazooka. With a hearty laugh, we hung him on the tree, and to this day, he hangs on mine. End poem. Oh, this one gave me goosebumps. What did you think of it, Pam?
I have to agree. Goosebumps is a perfect reaction to this. I enjoy Sam Sampson's poetry, and it's good to see that he put a write in this contest. I like that he brings us back to, like, it's a very nostalgic write, and he brings us back to his childhood and the playing with the green army men. And I like right away that he mentions his grandfather. I hadn't seen my grandfather in ages, moved so far away, it was hard. You know, because instantly we just know within those first couple of lines that his grandfather is going to be an important part of this Christmas, of this Christmas rite. And I like when the part where he says, in the bottom of the box, one lone green army man, the one with the bazooka, with a hearty laugh, we hung him on the tree, and to this day he hangs on mine. And how wonderful that instead of, because some people are very particular about their Christmas trees. Everybody does their own way. My family was always, you know, everything and anything that was made by somebody in the family, you know, it was just all kinds of stuff. But, you know, some people like an exact pattern, you know, perfectly set decorations. And to know that his grandfather shared his sense of humor with Sam and they laughed and encouraged him to hang the army man on the tree rather than say, you know what, that's not a decoration, go put it with the rest of the army men. You know, I thought, what a beautiful and delightful moment. And not only that it was that moment, but from then on, it created a tradition. So I just absolutely found this write beautiful and very well done.
Oh, Pam, that was such a stunning comment. And I agree. I love that there was the encouragement to hang that army man on the tree and that the army man still today hangs because it wasn't discouraged. And you actually remind me, I have a bit of a confession. I have more than one Christmas tree. I'd like to have three. I have enough ornaments to fill three trees. But I only have two. I have my main Christmas tree, which is where all the Christmas presents, and I have a little one that I give to my children, and my children get to, they get to hang the ornaments that either they've decided go on it or that are old ones that either I made or that they made. This year, they decided to hang chalkboards that count down to Christmas onto the trees. And so I love it, though, because like you were saying, some trees have the themes to them. And I grew up with an aunt who very much had that. You'd walk in and it was like a Martha Stewart home. Everything had a theme. Everything was in its place. Everything was super, super clean. But then you also have trees that are just kind of chaotic, like the trees that I grew up with, where you had the people that it was the ornaments that I made and the ornaments that I bought and that my siblings also bought. And there's a beauty to even that. And even thinking about my own tree last year, my main tree, thinking about that, it was very much kind of themed looking. But this year, because I visited my sister has an old ornament called a crystal.
Area code 111.
Hi, welcome to the show. Oh, okay. Something's going on. I apologize. I think I briefly cut out. But there's my sister had Clisson bells. And so I ended up buying a couple for the show, or not for the show, but for my tree, because it now has a special meaning to my family. And so I love this. I love how it shows how things can become part of your tree, part of your tradition, part of your own family practices that may not be conventional, but it doesn't take away their meaning. And so for that, I think this is such a phenomenal piece because it shows that. It shows how life can do those kind of things, bring those moments to us. So it does look like we have a guest on the show. I think Pam is talking to them right now. So I guess we'll pause for a second and wait to get word about that. Because I don't want us to necessarily just go on. All right, well, I am gonna have us move on to the next phone while Pam is talking with them. Oh, are you back?
I am back. You know what?
Okay.
I did. Well, first of all, I'd like to welcome Hotep to the show. He's called into a show before, so I'm glad he's able to call in here. So welcome.
Hey.
Hi, Hotep.
How are you? Hey there.
I'm good. It's very nice to meet you. I'm Victoria. I don't think that we've met before.
I called before. I think you may have been on. No?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay.
Could have been.
All right. Yeah, no worries. Either way, it's great to meet you.
Yeah, and great to have you here. Did you bring a poem for the show tonight by chance?
No, I didn't write one, but I did join All Poetry, and I found something pretty intriguing about the site. Just like anything in life, there's often a good lesson. I posted a few poems, and the objectives of the poems were to motivate people, but especially to reach certain marginalized readers from communities that often, you know, aren't necessarily deep into poetry. So my linguistics was not typically standard English, but rather often included a bit of play on words that would come in the form of Ebonics. And Ebonics is a beautiful language created by African Americans and often misunderstood. Well, the rating system on All Poets gave me all kinds of scathing negative numbers. And I thought, okay, that's odd. I'm new to the site, and some automated system is telling me that my use of words is subpar and inferior my rationale, of course, was I'm not trying to reach people that may communicate the way the Queen of England might. I'm trying to reach people that need the poems and what I'm trying to say, my message, not, you know? And
yeah.
So then I realized, wait a minute, even in computer science, Google fired some black programmers who communicated and spoke up about the lack of diversity at Google in the programming world. And then I thought,
yeah.
Wait a minute, even some of the artificial intelligence that is used to scan faces is programmed by people, some of whom, not all, have their own inherent biases. And I thought, oh my goodness, how is there escaping some of these vices that occur digitally by humans who come with their own, you know, preconceived notions of what is great and what isn't. So how does the poetry world
yeah.
and the museums and the libraries, where there aren't too many marginalized people that go, I have one in my community, it's on a related matter, that it's very uppity, meaning, you know, the black folks with the suits and ties show up and pull up and they have their events. However, people in the projects not far from the library don't go because it's not a place that is appealing. There isn't the outreach to reach those people. You know, folks aren't going to show up at something that's kind of uppity and so-called classy if it doesn't fit their clothing style. They will feel uncomfortable. So, yeah, it's a related matter. There is a van in my city that has technology. So if people don't have an internet connection, they could go and use the van. Well, I went in the projects and I spoke to people a few feet from the van now. And I said, hey, do you know what that van does? And they looked at me like, not sure. So here's a van with about $200,000 in computer equipment. And the van driver and the technology specialist and the marketing department didn't think, you know what, let's have a few flyers and community and say the van is there. And, of course, the budget will probably be cut soon and the claim will be the people didn't use the van. Well, the people didn't know. Now, I told another group this and they said, well, why wouldn't the people ask? So in people's minds, often they think, well, if it's there, if you want it, you ask. But that's not the job of the consumer. That's the job of the marketer, the publicist, the public relations department. If we said that about Macintosh, oh, well, why didn't people just travel the 10 miles and ask Macintosh? Macintosh wouldn't be a multi-billion dollar company. So often the onus and the pressure is put on people that don't have the financial resources, often don't have the literary skills, analytical experience, legal expertise, et cetera, to comprehend what's going on. They're so busy trying to get food or trying to get a job or trying not to go to jail. Maybe someone is caught up in a situation. They're not thinking
exactly.
That, let me go and walk over to the van, or let me improve my comprehension of syntax and semantics. It's very odd. And I go through
well,
it.
Well, you
so
know
I can
what,
imagine, Hotep? Yeah.
I have to say I absolutely agree with you. Poetry should reach all people, and especially the common man. It's like when they went from having the Bible as an example to only being in Latin that the priests understood to being in the common language. Poetry needs to be understood by the common man, needs to know that the poet relates to them. And I can tell from your the way you talk that you are an extremely intelligent person. And I don't mean to interrupt, but we do have a lineup of poetry tonight where people are sharing with us poetry about their Christmas memories. And what I was hoping we could get from you is perhaps you would like to, as we read through the poems, you could share some of your thoughts with us. And if you have anything that vaguely relates to the topic, it doesn't have to be a Christmas rite, but anything that has to do, you know, with the idea that, you know, relates somewhat to Christmas memories, you could either send it to Victoria Frost on All Poetry, who is the hostess, or me, Pam Ray. Either one is welcome, but we're glad to have you here, but we really would like to be able to take time to delve into people's poetry.
Well, thank you for that. And poetry in my community and Christmas for some people isn't going to be the celebration that it will be for others. And thanks for that feedback. I appreciate it, ladies.
So you're right.
Christmas isn't always what it is for everybody else. And not everybody celebrates Christmas. So absolutely valid point. But we are celebrating this holiday season. So if you have something for Kwanzaa or Hanukkah. I was like, it's not Hakuna. Oh, but if you have any kind of holiday memory from around here, we would love to hear it because that's kind of the point of this show, is to delve into those memories, into the warmth of the celebration of this time of gathering and community. So if you have something, even if it's not Christmas, it is welcome. But we're just trying to share some warmth and some memories that bring us joy. So with that, I'll move on. This one is going to be in the presence of Christ the King. And Pam, would you give this a read for me, please?
Oh, I would be absolutely happy to. All right. This is In the Presence of Christ the King by Jordan Zuniga. And hopefully I pronounced that right. And it goes like this. Uplift your voice, rejoice and sing with the good news and tidings I have to bring, in urgent matter, an eternal thing, the indwelling presence of Christ our King. Rejoice, O heaven, rejoice, O earth, with news of endless worth. In a manger, the Son of God there dwell, the Prince of Peace, Emmanuel. There he lay, neither to weep nor mourn. The Son of God on earth is born. Rejoice in the presence that he shall bring to dwell in the presence of Christ the King. Rejoice, O heavens, rejoice, O earth, with news of endless worth. In a manger, the Son of God there dwell, the Prince of Peace, Emmanuel. May Lord Jesus Christ have all the glory. End poem.
Beautifully read, Pam. Thank you so much for that. I think this is a beautiful rite of not just time of the year for some people, but also for the faith of this person, a celebration not just of community gathering, but also of what they are celebrating with these gatherings, with these rituals, if you will. And it really reminds me almost of a Christmas carol, something that would be sung in a church, something that lets us return to our roots, return to the purpose and the meaning, and remember, in this case, the gift that Christ gave. So Christ gave, because I'm a Christian, so I believe in that, but I understand not everybody does. So for me, this is a time where we get to celebrate that, where we get to return to this and remember the gift that was given to the earth, to the people of the earth. And I think that this is a beautiful testament of that. It is a beautiful testament that also reminds us of how a gift can be more than just an item. It can be that gathering with our families. It can be a time where we get to see those that we don't always get to see. It could be those friends. It could be just that simple thought. And this was one thing that I was talking with my brother about in speaking with gifts. When I give gifts, I try to think of something that that person would like without it being something that they necessarily want. I try and think of something or find something that they may not even know that exists, that I know that they would enjoy. And it is a testament not to a price tag, but a testament to the relationships that we have. And so to me, this speaks of that first gift in the Christian faith, the gift of Christ and everything that he would bring. So I thought that this was absolutely stunning and it was beautiful and it was so reverent and it was such a fantastic rite, bringing the heart of Christmas and what comes with it. So, and Pam, having read it, what did you think?
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, I like how, you know, it's a very wonderful, straightforward style. I like how he expresses his own beliefs. It's a wonderful spiritual rite. You know, it's always good. I've never actually seen Jordan Zuniga's name before in any of our contests, so I'm always happy to see a new name, a new face, you know, writing for the LNP shows. You know, I like this time of year because no matter what for what reason people celebrate Christmas, oftentimes there is that sense of joy, that sense of wonder. I used to tell my children that Christmas was Jesus' birthday, and Christmas or Easter was his second birthday. And I like the sense of celebration. And I do also acknowledge that there is a difficult times for people when it comes to Christmas. And I think one of the important lessons that we can learn from a poem like this is that often it's that sense of what's spiritual, what's invisible, that is what Christmas is about, and not just, you know, how many presents can we buy? How much food can we eat? You know, I really like the use of the word rejoice over and over again in this. I think that's honestly one of my favorite words. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Beautifully said. Thank you for that. All right, up next, we are going to look at a piece by Daniel Ticino, and this is called Sharing Gifts, and I'll give this a read. Sharing Gifts by Daniel Ticino. Once among the pre-dawn hours before the light of Christmas sun, I awoke among the sleeping house and wandered about just for fun. Past sleepy snoring dad, down the hall I crawled with care. I snuck down the creaky stairs that night, hoping no one had heard me there. But something felt not quite right as I wandered through each silent room. The world was dark, there was no light, no Christmas lilies shone to bloom. The Christmas tree itself is dark, thinking I must and fast as well. Before Santa flew overhead, his task was now on me befell, to guide the way for Santa's sled. A thought at once came to my mind. I ran into the kitchen quick. Flashlights I grabbed turned on. They shined. Outside I ran to guide Saint Nick. One in each hand, another to spare, I waved my lights into the sky, flashing hope throughout the air, looking for reindeer up high. Hours I danced with lights ablaze. A spectacle I must have been, when a distant spark caught did catch my gaze, the light of dawn now did begin. Sank low, my eyes did tear, the efforts did not save the day. No Santa Claus, no Christmas cheer, my lights he missed and flew away. I waited until the dawn had come to head inside and back to bed. It's when then I saw my mom and dad and sister too. Hooray, they said. Santa came, they yelled with glee. I saw him myself, my dad did smile. The presents were under the tree, and my family hugged for a nice long while. End poem. And Pam, would you mind telling me your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think this is absolutely, absolutely beautiful. You know, it's a wonderful emotive rite. And I like how he adds his A-N in, which he says, I was a little kid. We lost power on Christmas Eve, and I went outside with a flashlight looking for Santa. I eventually just went back to bed, but the story was inspired by that incident. And, you know, it's funny because when you're a kid, it's almost like everything happens, and it all has to do with the and I love that, you know, like the poem stands beautifully on its own, but the A-N adds that extra to it because you can just imagine a little boy who thinks, you know, that Santa is guided by the lights, the Christmas lights. And if all the power has gone out, how is Santa going to land? So there's this real sense of innocence to this, of a child going out, you know, and using his flashlight in hopes that Santa can find his way. You know, I like how this kind of has a little bit of darkness to it, but there's a real wonderful sense of hope to it. It also made me think of, while it's not about this, it makes me think of how often there are families who can't afford gifts, but there are organizations out there like Toys for Tots, you know, or even churches that give money or presents to families. And you know, that's, to me, that's a really just a beautiful way of helping children to feel a sense of hope, a sense of light that they might not otherwise for Christmas. I just think this is wonderful storytelling at his best. And, you know, I really appreciate and enjoy Daniel's writing, and I'm glad he was inspired to put something in this contest. So very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I really do love what you say about how it does have that innocence, because it does. He's captured the innocence of the fear that if the Christmas lights aren't there, Santa isn't going to come, because that's how little minds work. But there is that beauty that comes with this, the joy of family just being there. And I agree that his author's note really does add to the feeling of this entire poem. Especially he ends it with, you know, I don't care what anybody says that night. I think I saw him flying in the distance. And it reminded me, as a child, I grew up in a house where my family slept upstairs, and we have a great room, and the tree was just magical. And I'm sure it was just, at this point, it's just a dream. But I distinctly remember being a child, and my whole house was still sleeping, and there's a balcony that runs through the main of the house that overlooks the great room and the tree. And I remember peeking just beyond the wall where my brother's door was that overlooked into the great room, and I swear I could see Santa's, like, just like his lantern in the top of his hat as he was coming in to put some presents underneath the tree. And this reminds me of that. It's this cherished, poignant memory of mine. And sure, it may just be a dream, but it's something from my childhood that I latched on, because I still remember seeing the holly vine that kind of wrapped around St. Nicholas's lantern. I remember seeing his attire, and the red was redder, like more of a deep red, than remember seeing Santa as. It was more of the old German kind of Santa image than what commercial Santa looks like. And maybe it was just a really good Coke commercial that put that in my tiny brain. And maybe it's something more, but it's still that magicalness that comes around this year. But even as an adult, you have fond memories of Santa Claus, and you can't help but cling to them and love them and believe that there's some truth there because of what it brings. And I know that today, speaking of the good, today I ended up wandering to the mall. And there's a cotton candy vendor, and my girls wanted cotton candy. So I got them, and there was a big, long line. And this family had been waiting for quite a bit of time, and we were all shuffled into place, and this family was put behind us. And there was this guy who came in way after, and he was being a Grinch. I mean, just not to peg people as good or bad or whatnot. He just didn't have the time for it. And he was the family that was behind me was actually asked to wait even longer so that they could just get rid of them. And they were just waiting on like a little cotton candy thing that was shaped like Pikachu. And my beautiful, beautiful little four-year-old gave her cotton candy Pikachu to the little girl because the family had been waiting so long. To me, that was just such a beautiful thing, because that's really the heart of this time of the year. Just like when I took the girls to go see Santa at the mall, my eldest made sure that Santa, she made him a paper airplane because Santa deserves presents too. And I think that's what's beautiful about this. There's that belief, that pure goodness, that the concern wasn't that he would get presents, it's that his family wouldn't, and that Christmas would be ruined. And perhaps even he'd save the neighbors. I think that's the real beauty of this, not just the innocence, but the way that he reminds us that this was not a purely selfish act, like we so often through the year. It was something that was just done out of care and concern for himself as much as his family and friends and neighbors. And I think that's just truly beautiful. The memory, being convinced that Santa was flying in the sky, because I feel that on a deep level, but also the pure goodness that is expressed in this, because ultimately, the world is a better place when everybody thinks just a little bit less of themselves. So I think this is such a stunning rite. Do you have any fun memories like that, Pam? Do you remember Santa visiting?
Oh, first of all, I have to say that I absolutely just loved your comment. It just really touched my heart. You know, even if it was a dream, it was a dream that was beautiful, that meant something to you, that brought you joy. And I like that you went from sharing a memory you had of your childhood to sharing something that's going to become a memory that your children will have, or that you will have of your children. So there's like the different generations. And I have to say how wonderful that your four-year-old shared her cotton candy. I don't know many four-year-olds that would do that. Now, me, I will tell you that just like as I am as an adult, and I was a very cynical child. The only time, every time Santa was brought up, I was made sure people knew the truth. There was one time up there, my mom had this friend who he enjoyed his whiskey and beer a little too much. He was trying to convince me that Santa Claus existed, and I looked at him and I said, because he was telling me that, you know, he had seen Santa Claus. I said, yeah, well, you were probably drunk. And it wasn't Santa. But I do have good Christmas memories. I do. I had, good food, wonderful presents. You know, I loved singing Christmas songs. I still do. I'll break out. Despite the fact that I just don't like my singing voice, and I very rarely sing the rest of the year, I love to sing Christmas songs. But as far as, Santa goes, I know Phil would probably not like me saying this because she's a huge fan of Santa. But what can I say? I was a snotty child.
So I'm a little Christmas centric. I mean, I love Halloween. As everybody knows, I adore Halloween, but Christmas is my absolute favorite holiday. And so we actually have a mailbox that the girls can put letters in. And then I send, like last night, I think I started at like 9 o'clock and I finally finished making everything for Santa to write back by midnight. And the whole time I'm sitting there on the phone with my best friend and, she has her surviving baby is going to be one in February. And
aww.
But adjusted, he's only 5 months. And so she was just like, Victoria, I'm going to need you to make me these things when he's a little older. And I was like, of course I'm going to. You're just going to be like, hey, we wrote to Santa and I'm going to have to like put this thing together because I actually handcrafted a Christmas card because my daughter, my eldest and then their babysitter wrote to Santa. So I handcrafted 2 Christmas cards and then spent the time to pull out my feather quill and write in calligraphy in black ink for the majority of it. And then I have a very special Santa signature that I do that's in golden ink. And then I put it into its envelope and I pulled out my wax seals and my antique sealing wax stamps and I stamp it and then I do pretty writing on the front. And so I go all out because you're right. Those are those memories that they're going to have. And so your story reminded me, because as I was talking to her, she, like you, is also very cynical. And she found out at a very young age that Santa wasn't real because she would go to the sink after Christmas and there would still be a ring of milk in the sink because her whole family is lactose intolerant. And then she'd see that the cookies are back in the tin. And so she was like, yeah, I found out that Santa wasn't real by the time I was like 5. And I was like, it's okay. I'll keep the spirit alive for you.
There you go.
Oh. But honestly,
and I do believe in the spirit of Christmas.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was going to say is, you know, I think the real testament though is it's not the jolly old giant, if you will. But one thing that I kind of like with what my eldest did at the mall is that idea of just going out and just being a little kinder wherever you can. Be it last year, we found a little lady whose husband had passed away that year. And so we got her a shopping spree at Goodwill because that was her favorite store. And just delivered that as a card with no name, just something for her to enjoy. And I agree that it's all about the spirit. And as long as we're imbuing that spirit in to people, be it Christmas or Kwanzaa or Hanukkah or Yule, or the winter solstice, what have you, there's always going to be that beauty of giving and charity and unity that we can find so long as we act accordingly. So I loved your story, though, Pam, because it probably wasn't Santa because you were drunk. Like, way to be. Oh, Pam, I love it. I love it. I love how direct you are.
Yep, haven't changed much over the years.
That's okay. We love you as you are because you are the perfect Pam. All right, up next, we have No Good Deed Goes Unpunished by Keith D. Lankford. And would you mind giving this one a read?
I would be happy to. All right. No Good Deed Goes Unpunished by Keith D. Lankford. And it goes like this. Late night Christmas, parents in bed, children playing, decide to clean up instead. The night beside the fire, fading memories, new days soon coming, won't they be pleased? Plugging in the vacuum, built into the home, the fireplace soon clean, gratitude now shown. Smoke fills the air, the embers of the night, found a new flare, now burning bright. Wake up and join us, the night is still young, the burning canister loosened from the wall which it hung, burning memories seared into the flesh, happy new year, it might just be the best, light some candles and welcome in a brand new year, end poem.
Beautifully.
That
right,
one seems kind of sad. Goodness.
I mean, I see the sadness. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Go, like, please.
No, I just read to you. I want to hear your thoughts first.
Okay. Well, I think what I really liked about this is that there is a little bit of a sadness to it because I think it kind of gives a hint that perhaps a home burnt down. But what I really loved about this is kind of that idea of when everybody else is sleeping and getting excited for the next day, here he was going around trying to clean up the house and tidy things up. And it kind of reminds me, last week we read that The Christmas Mouse by Pink Fairy 5, and it kind of reminds me of that, the little busybody that's going around just trying to get everything in its place, in its order. And even the idea of lighting a candle. In the military, you light a candle to guide the soldier back home. And even in, at least in Catholic rites, you also light a candle for your loved ones when they've passed on. And so this also kind of reminds me of that. This reminds me of that idea of leaving a guiding light out for the family, trying to make sure the house is perfect for the family. And it reminds me of Christmas movies, such as, I'll Be Home for Christmas, where they're trying to make their way. They weren't planning on being home for Christmas, but they try and make their way to the home, and they make it just in time. And it's that guiding light that's guiding our family members back home. Sometimes we don't even expect it, but still making sure. Or even Christmas with the Cranks. That's always a really good kind of fun, humorous Christmas story. But that's what this reminds me of, is the way in which we try and make home all nice and warm and cozy and clean and ready for those gifts that we are never quite expecting on Christmas Day, because we always hope that they'll show up even if they don't. So I thought it was quite darling. So I did have a question there of if maybe there was a house that was burning down. But I don't think, I'm hoping that's not what it is. So, and what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, well, first of all, I really like what you had to say about the whole idea of, you know, cleaning up and getting the house ready, you know, and you know, which is often an example set by the parents, especially the mother. And I did get the feeling that this was about a child who accidentally started a fire, because I really think that the burning canister loosed from the wall, which had hung, burning memories seared into flesh, does have to do with maybe, like, I don't get the impression that a whole house was burnt down, but that, you know, perhaps the child had gotten burned, which, you know, took me off guard. It did, because I wasn't, you know how, like, when you're reading a poem, you're focusing on the tone of your voice and the reading the words, and then you start to think afterwards, like, you just, to me, my automatic reaction was, oh, no, like, what happened here? You know, this, and I'm very, I have to say, because of my son, Jaron, having been in the hospital when he was little for, like, 3 months and gotten skin grafts and third-degree burns on his legs, I am very sensitive about rights that to do with fire. And it's nobody's fault.
Yeah.
You know, I just am automatically going to, oh my God, what happened here? But, like, so I needed you to comment first, which I'm glad you did, because it gave me an opportunity to hear how you saw it, and plus to kind of refocus my energy into, you know, what Keith wanted to come across. And to me, while I get the impression there was a small burn, the main part of this rite is the fact that the child, I think I need to quiet my voice down. Somebody just opened my bedroom door, probably to glare at me. But the main point to me of this rite is that this child learned that when it comes to Christmas time, it's not about what can I get, what can people do for me, but what can I do for people? You know, my family is sleeping, and I have an opportunity to help them. I have an opportunity to surprise them. And I think that's what is the heart within this rite. And it's very well done.
Pam, that was such a fantastic comment. And thank you for sharing that. You're right. When we're reading poems, especially when we're on the air and we're reading poems and we're trying to focus on how we're saying things and everything, it's hard to always grasp everything in the poem. And like you, well, using your example, there's a lot of times where poems will hit us in very specific ways that we have a natural emotional reaction to it. And that may or may not be what the poem's about. But I'm so appreciative for your honesty, because it also speaks to how our own experiences in life can shape the way that we look at poems. Like you, there are words that do seem to hint at a burn, hopefully not as traumatic as what you went through with Jaron, but it's still there. And so helping us to hear those other thoughts, hearing what other poets say, so that we can think about what we read, can be helpful. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about these shows, is that we do get to hear what other poets think of when it comes to all these different works. We do get to share what our impression of is each of them, and it lets us rethink even how we're approaching it, which, you know, again, gives us just more perspective that we can use when we figure out how these pieces impacted us. So I think that was such a beautiful, beautiful comment, and I really appreciate it. So thank you for that, for your honesty, for your comment, for everything. So thank you. And up next, I'm actually going to have you read this one again, just because I need to run a quick little errand. So if you could read this one, I'll be back before the end of it.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. This is "She Gave Me a Gift" by Wayne Gent. It goes like this. It was the night before Christmas. Didn't have a spouse. Parked the old car back behind the house. And come here, baby, give me a kiss. Knew it wouldn't be long till I was in heavenly bliss. It took a while to get her skirt on the floor. She had a body the reindeer would adore. Took a lot of work, hard to rest. Laid my head upon her lovely breast. Gave her a kiss as she lowered her head. Can't believe she went down, enough said. Watched the window, got covered in steam. For a moment there, thought was a dream. Reached down and grabbed her to give her a lift. Told her it was time to give her a gift. Next thing I know, I saw morning light. Figured we slept most of the night. Looked at my watch, the date was 24. Said, hey, it's Christmas Eve, give me some more. She was great, better than any toy. On September 24th, we had a boy. End poem.
So, I think this is delightful. His author's note says, this story is not quite true, but we did have a boy born on September 24th. This poem was written for the blog talk show hosted by Victoria Frost. I plan on being in the show to read. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to be here, but I think this is just sometimes the gifts that we give come a little later than expected, or the consequences of those gifts. And while this is a little bit more steamy for the show, it also does show those beautiful memories and how it led to a life full of firsts with his son. And so I think this was just fun and delightful. It was humorous. There was a little bit of hinting at the adult conspiracy, if you will, but it really had quite a bit of playfulness to it. And again, just shows how life goes on and how little moments can lead to far greater things. So it was such a fun and stunning write. And what did you think of it, Pam?
Oh, I very much enjoy this. As always, he's got great rhyme. I liked the sensual humor, you know, the bit of sexiness, the bit of humor, the fun, creative innuendos. There actually is more babies born in September than any other month. That's like the number one month as far as, you know, for birth. At least when I read the statistic a few years back, it was. And I can't imagine it's changed. Because I figure what it is it's like during the holidays, you know, in the December, during December, people are giving gifts, getting romantic, you know, and so that really wouldn't surprise me if that was a true statistic. You know, the part I had the hardest time not laughing at when I was reading was "Gave her a kiss as she lowered her head. Can't believe she went down. Enough said. It's like Merry Christmas. Here's your gift."
I have been informed that being woken to that is always a treat for the opposite sex. So,
right, I can imagine
those little morning delights. Oh. Well, that was stunning. Up next, we have a piece called Going Home to Grandma. And this is by Naomi Sarah. For those that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Naomi has recently joined the Late Night Poets host team, and she helps host Twisted Tuesdays every once in a while, right, Pam?
That is correct, yes.
So if you're ever curious to hear Naomi's thoughts, be sure to tune in on Tuesdays. Pam and Phil and now Naomi are all doing the Twisted Tuesdays, so check them out. I know they are. Two of the three are marvelous women. I haven't really gotten to know Naomi, but Going Home to Grandma by Naomi Sarah. My mother hugs me close as we struggle to see through thick gray fog from the rain-beaten windows of my grandma's house into the furious spitting foam that whips our shores with long-nailed flashes. My mother's fingers dig deep into my shoulders. I toss and turn to break free, but Mom clutches me closer, squeezing me half breathless. No worries now. They'll make it back home, my grandma says. Her voice quivers and eyes cringe with every strike of lightning, each crash of thunder and howl of the wind that scorches us from above, laughing and mocking us. I squeeze my eyes closed, trying to fill my head with images of Bessie and I picking off the petals of daisies, dreaming of boys as we laugh, watching old Buster twirl and swirl, trying to catch his own tail. But all I hear are my screams that day. I stepped on a hornet's nest. All I see is Grandma's one-eyed rooster aiming straight at me, his head to the ground and me screeching as I run for cover. I hated hornets and that old rooster, dreaded those long, stormy nights. But oh, how much I loved going to Grandma's. I looked forward to each holiday. I can still remember the scent of her, fresh, baked bread toasting, the greasy bacon sizzling over the great cast iron stove in those early mornings, and the loud bustling of voices of our fishermen filling up an already too cramped kitchen, arguing and boasting of their adventures over the roar of the mighty blues. Always thankful they made it back home. End poem. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Well, this is one of those poems that's just worth hearing over and over again. I like that there's a duality to the memory. First, it goes back to a memory and a time. Well, first of all, I have to say I really like that picture of the old wood stove in the center of the room. There's just, even that picture has a nostalgic feel to it. But I like how she brings us back to a memory, like a time of panic, a time of worry, when, you know, there's a storm outside. They're extremely worried about the men who have gone out fishing. And then she brings us back to the memory and the times of being in their house. And I have to say, I totally relate to the old rooster and the hornets, you know, living out in the woods in the country. You know, as a kid and even when as being an adult, my mom always had like chickens, roosters, geese. And geese make wonderful watchdogs, but they are mean SOBs. They will basically chase and just anyone. Wonderful watchdogs, I shouldn't say, but you know, like they really guard their property well. But they're also very willing to chase little girls, and the same with roosters. So I totally related to that. I totally got it. Then there was also that idea of, you know, dreaming, you know, remembering those times, those the voices of loved ones, the picking of the petals from daisies, dreaming of boys as we laugh, watching old Buster twirl and swirl. And I like that it had a happy ending. I like that, you know, that the men came, the fishermen came home, and I like how she says, filling up an already too cramped kitchen, arguing and boasting of their adventures. You know, that makes you want to hug and strangle a man more than anything. than what having them come home late and you know, and jolly and bragging. Because I don't know about any other woman, but I have an overactive imagination. And if you're running late and you're not calling me, I will assume that you are dead until I see you. And then when I see you, I will both want to hug you and strangle you.
I giggle because I often tease my husband that if he doesn't answer his phone, I assume that he is dying on the side of the road. So
exactly.
Sorry.
But I just
continue.
Was a wonderful write. Very well done.
Oh, I agree. And I love what you said, that it has a happy ending, because there's a lot of it that feels almost frightening. You know, you don't know if there's something good going on. You can feel the grip of her mother's fingers digging into her shoulder. Grandma saying, you know, don't worry, they'll be back home. But it gives that fear of not knowing what is going to happen. But it also has the warmth of those memories of going to grandma's house and the cast iron stove and the smell of fresh bread and the greasy bacon. And as she was writing that, and as I was reading that, I distinctly remember being at my grandma's house. My dad, the way that I grew up, my dad's family doesn't really get along with each other very well. And so I would never really went to my aunts and uncles for Christmas. And I only remember one Christmas that I actually got to go to my grandparents. My dad's parents were grandpa. My dad's dad passed away when I was in second grade, and I never met my grandma because she died when my dad was 18. So, and my grandpa never remarried. So I only really went to one grandparents, my mom's parents, and I only went there once that I can even remember, maybe twice. But what I do remember is when I did get to go visit my grandparents, you know, once, maybe twice a year, I remember every morning I would come downstairs and I remember that smell. I remember the coffee, because my grandma would make an entire pot of coffee. Whatever she didn't use would go into the roast that she would make us the first day that we got there. And she would always make flapjacks, and she made her own sausage. So it was always like a mix of like deer and maybe some pork, because the deer was very lean. But I remember those smells. I remember even the smells, the slight hint of cigarettes both my grandparents smoked. And I just, it's such a distinct thing. And it's none of the image is too very poignant. I know their kitchen, and I remember how she would lean against the sink on nearby her elbows. But I remember that smell. And so I love that Naomi talks about that, because so often in poetry, we like to give images. We like to paint these pictures with words. But so much of it really does come down to scent. And I feel like she captures that. She captures the time period with the great cast iron stove, but she captures the beauty and the warmth of the moment in that scent, even after we've been bombarded with the fear and the anxiety. There's that peace, because like that great cast iron stove, it will stand. Grandma is going to stand and is going to be there, and life will be okay because of it. So I thought this was such a marvelous piece. While there's a hinting of Christmas at the end, I don't feel like it's necessarily a Christmas poem, but I do love the warmth of the memory and the security that she brings with this. So I thought it was just absolutely stunning. A fantastic write, just like you said, Pam. And up next, we actually are going to have your piece. And we are running out of writes, so if anyone is listening and would like to share, or if you have any extra writes, then do feel free to add them. But I'm going to put this over in the group, and you can take it away when you're ready.
Yes, and if you don't add writes and call in, you will have to listen to me sing, "We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas."
Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. I love it. We'll have our own little Christmas carol party.
All right. Well, I will tell you that this really doesn't have to do with my Christmas memories, but it mentions, you know, memories, and it's a Christmas-themed write. So, you know, I didn't have time to write something new, and I was just trying to find something because it looked like you were a little short. So, anyways, this is the music of the bells, and it goes like this. Two turtle doves are skating by the light of the full moon, prancing and dancing to love's most sweetest tune. A song that is familiar, it plays within their hearts. Christmas time is coming, and soon it will depart. Take advantage of these times, dear family and friends. Just like life with joys and strife, Christmas time does end. The bells, which are caroling with deep resounding sighs, will soon lay still an empty chill where dear memories do rise. Embrace the spirit's blessings with a soul deeply compelled to hear beyond the year anew the music of the bells. End poem.
So I think this is just a stunning write. While it's not necessarily a Christmas memory, it really does kind of capture the memories that we make during this time. I love that you start off with two turtle doves that are skating, because it reminds me of the 12 Days of Christmas song, you know, two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. But kind of the fun and the joy of that. In fact, the whole stanza really has the fun and the joy of the 12 days of Christmas and the memories that are made with each of it. They're prancing, they're dancing, and love's the most sweetest tune. It's actually really funny that you wrote this a year ago, because the clisson bell that I bought, because my sister on her tree actually is two turtle doves, two white turtle doves. And so now the one that hangs on my tree
cool.
In honor of her. Yeah. So again, it's not necessarily your memory, but it kind of reminds me of that, because that's a memory that I've created. A song that is familiar, it plays within their hearts. Christmas time is coming and soon it will depart. I love that stanza in and of itself, because in so many ways, this moment in time is so ephemeral. It comes and it goes, and we get to enjoy it for what it is, and we create those rich memories, but they're gone so quickly, and we don't always think about them until we get to this, until we get back to this time of year, and suddenly we're reminded of those memories. Take advantage of these times, dear family and friends. Just like life with joys and strife, Christmas time does end. Just kind of along the same lines as that idea of enjoy these moments, make these memories, because you only have a finite time to do so. The bells, which are caroling with deep resounding sighs, will soon lay still an empty chill where do memories do rise. And again, you wrote this a year ago, and here's the first one bell again. With two turtle doves. But even then, it reminds me of even the Silver Bells song, kind of that ringing of the year and the joy and the beauty of it. The bells of Santa's sleigh that kind of fill the air. It's the hope and the magic and the joy that this time brings. But it's going to end. We're going to go into January. We're going to leave Christmas behind, and we're not going to be able to. It's just not the same after this season's over. So we embrace the spirit's blessing, a soul deeply compelled to hear beyond the year anew the music of the bells. Just again, that call to make those memories, even if it's not a specific memory, make those memories, see the magic, explore and connect and be with the time of year. Life in and of itself is finite, and each moment gone can never be recaptured, except replayed within our minds. So I think this is just a really beautiful and stunning piece, Pam. So thank you for sharing
that. Well, thank you, Victoria. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Happy to share. And yes, it is. You know, and it's not just Christmas. Any time you're making memories, memories with family and friends, or you know, just it's important. Or even if you're just on your own, you know, just take time to embrace the moments that you have.
Absolutely. All right. And up next, we have A Christmas Mouse by Daniel Duhame. And I will give this one a read once I get it in the group. A tiny pair of feet scurried along the floor, stopping only to pause and look at a decorated Christmas tree. Using his nose to sniff around, wiggling his whiskers to find food crumbs to bring back home to his family, who waited patiently to eat a Christmas meal. Santa, who happened to see him, thought about how he would help him. He reached into his sack and pulled out one piece of bread, 5 tiny peas, and 5 pieces of tiny tomato or potatoes, giving it to the mouse to take back home for a meal. With a squeak, the mouse said thank you to Santa, and with that returned to his family, where the mouse's wife cooked up the meal for everyone. End poem. And to read his author's note, he said, I was thinking of my mom when I wrote this. I used to call her my little mouse. And Pam, would you start off with your thoughts on this?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. You know, I really appreciate Daniel Duhame and his poetry and how much he writes for the shows. I think this poem stands beautifully on its own, but the A-N adds an extra specialness to it. I also really enjoy that last week we had a Christmas mouse poem, you know, from Pink Fairy 5, and now this week we have a Christmas mouse poem from Daniel. I really like to find food crumbs to bring back home to his family who waited patiently to eat a Christmas meal. Santa, who happened to see him, thought about how he would help them. But I like that part because I like the personification of animals in tales and stories. And we see this mouse wanting so desperately to provide for and help his family, which works really well as a metaphor for what many parents and grandparents go through during the holidays. But then that Santa sees this little mouse and wonders how he can help him. You know, to me that really touched my heart. And the reason it did is because, well, you could just look at this as a simple tale of a Christmas tale with Santa and a mouse. You know, to me, I also see it as because Santa to me is the representation of the spirit of Christmas. And the spirit of Christmas isn't what can we do for the biggest and the best people. You know, it's what can we do for the smallest person. You know, the person who's suffering the most, the child who doesn't have anything, the child that needs a smile. You know, I just think this is a beautiful write and very well done.
Oh, Pam, I absolutely adored that comment, especially when you referenced how it's not about doing big things for big people, but what we can do for even the smallest among us. Because you're right, that really is the heart of this time of year, of helping to uplift our fellow man, finding the ways in which we can bring people together and bring each of us out of our own position to something higher and better. You actually reminded me there is a, I think it's Welsh, tale of the Yule Cat. And in it, it's actually a cat that if your employer does not give you charity or clothes, that the cat will come and devour them. And it reminds us that even if you're not celebrating Christmas, that this time of year is about helping each other, helping to uplift each other, and bringing something better into this world, starting the year off in a better place and helping others be in a better place too, knowing that you'll be uplifted. What I particularly loved about this is, and I mentioned this, I think, with Pink Fairy 5, what I really like about this is that my youngest is my woodland mouse. Everyone in my family has an animal. My eldest is a honeybee. My youngest is a woodland mouse. And so I actually have stuff around Christmas for each of them. Not surprisingly, it's harder to find a honeybee related to Christmas than a mouse, but it's often hard to find normal stuff, cute mouse normal stuff. So I love the Christmas mouse because it reminds me of my youngest, the way that she kind of squeaks and runs around trying to make something happen. But there's also this beauty and this giving in her. And this piece really does remind me of that. It reminds me of the way in which even at 2, almost 3, I don't want to admit that, she's almost 3, even at this age, she still finds ways to show love and give joy and be caring. And there's a vibrancy that she brings to our family. And this poem kind of reminds me of that. I can see it just very easily going from a he to a she, and this could be my youngest. I think that there's a meekness in this. And while it's not necessarily a Christmas memory, he shares beautifully that he used to call his own mother his little mouse. And because of that, the story is inspired by that. And it's also a reminder that our memories can bring forth beautiful stories and tales. It can inspire beautiful stories that warm our hearts. And getting to watch Daniel in his storytelling, because I've been following his work for a while. He's been writing into the shows for, I think, over a year now. Getting to see it grow and evolve, I'm always amazed at how he brings it back home. He always leaves me with a feeling, be it he's writing to a dark show or something beautiful like this, which he actually didn't write for the show specifically. He wrote it and he shared it with us. And I'm so, so thankful that he did, because it's such a beautiful tenderness. And again, it shows how our memories inspire us to be more, to do more. And like you said, to share even with the smallest among us so that we can uplift each other. So that was a little bit of a ranty comment, but it's just because his work is always just, it's so overwhelming to me, the way in which it touches my heart and my soul. So it's such a stunning write. So any final thoughts on this one, Pam?
No, but I really absolutely loved your comment. And you're right, this is one of those writes that does fit for any time of the year. I just think you made a wonderful comment there. And it's just absolutely a heartfelt write. Oh, and just to let you know, in case you needed it, I did go and grab a poem off of Fill My Eyes page, because she told me that anytime we were short in shows, I could go to her page and grab something.
Oh, perfect, perfect. I do have 3 carryovers from last week's show, so I'm probably going to have us read those real quick, and then I will head over to Phil's. But that is,
okay.
I appreciate and Phil, how she always has us like in the ready.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So since this one is Christmas themed, I'm going to have us read this next one. It is by Julie Buck, and it's called Stretch Little Kitty. And would you mind giving this one a read for us, Pam?
I would be happy to. Stretch Little Kitty by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. Each kit on a limb of this cherry Christmas cat. Okay, let me try that again. Wow, Julie wants me to read a tongue twister. Okay, here we go. Each kid on a limb of this cheery Christmas cat Christmas tree, they bring their own special ornament. Oh, what may they be? Mistletoe, a snowman, a red stocking stuffed full in pink, roses bright. A little kitten shall lead them to the promise of the holy silent night. Stretch little orange and cap of bright red. Please do reach by, far by, 'cause all on top glows the spiritual divinity of the guiding golden star. End poem.
It's only a tongue twister, but I think what I love about this so much is that it kind of shows, well, so we have two cats. I'm not a cat person. At one point we had seven cats. It was way too much for me. But we have two cats. And as it's well known with cats, they like to climb into the Christmas tree. And so what this really reminded me of is the way that the cats do climb into the tree. They find their own little adventures branch by branch, trying to weave their way up to the top of the star. I have a Christmas angel on my main tree, but find their way up to that star, claiming that it's a guiding light, but it really, they're there to knock it down and play with it. There's a fun and an innocence with this, and to me, a little bit of humor, which just reminds me of all the times when you've had to shoo a cat away from a tree and just try and get them not to knock stuff over. But of course, she's also picked this beautiful picture for those that can't see. It's a tree made out of cats, and they're each doing their own little thing upon that tree. And so I think that this is what makes this piece just joy in it, the little stories, the way that each cat is finding its own adventure all the way up to the guiding star, and the idea of a little kitten shall lead them to the promise of the holy silent night. I have to say, I've never known a cat that lets the night actually be silent, but I'm willing to be wrong. So I thought this was just, it was fun and it was playful, and I thought it was stunning. And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, it's fun. It's playful. I like how the rhyme was both inner rhyme and end rhyme. I thought it was really clever when she put, a little kitten shall lead them to the promise of the holy silent night. You know, with playing on the idea of, instead of a child leading them, a kitten will lead them. I actually started to write for this picture, for this contest, but I didn't finish in time. I actually, when I get a chance, enjoy writing for John Cole's contest. He's always got a lot of, like, fun pictures. You know, but this is just absolutely delightful, and I really like how she captured the personality of the different cats within the picture. So just very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I always love about her work, is she can take a picture and I feel like she can tell the story that's behind it. And there's a lot of people that can do that. But Julie has such a fun way of doing that that makes it chore. It's a work of art, but it's also something playful. And I think that's what I just adore about her work. So thank you for that fantastic comment, Pam. That was phenomenal. Up next, we have a poem called Dip by Patterson Mooney, and I'll give this one a read. Inner child's joy, romping, splashing, bringing back youthful memories. End poem. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts?
I like that she wrote for a ten word challenge. If brevity, especially mega brevity, is like, it's only 10 words, is not easy. And I can see why she won gold in this one. It's a beautiful write all the way through. What I love about this is that she does capture the joy of being a child. She brings us back to when we didn't care about getting our pants muddy or wet, because we wanted to splash. We wanted to play in the dirt. We wanted to play in the mud. And sometimes as adults, we just got to say, you know what, screw it. I'm bringing out my inner child. I'm going to be romping and splashing, and, you know, I'm going to be smiling. And I really thought this was just a delightful 10 words all the way through and very well done.
I love what you said there, Pam, because you're right. A lot of times we do just have to bring out our inner child, even if it's not what everybody else is expecting, or what society even says is right or wrong. And it reminds me of my father. He has always said that we are only as old as we think, and you only become an adult when you forget how to play, because children are always playing off of their imagination and their ideas. So finding the moments to have fun, finding the moments to splash and romp and revel in those old memories really is what brings youth and vibrancy to the spirit. And so like you were saying, you know, it's hard to create a beautiful picture or image in 10 words or less. She did it in 9. And it is such a stunning rite. Because it does harken back to those days where we saw a puddle and you had to jump in it and you didn't care if your pants got wet. You didn't care if everything was soggy and muddy. It was just about capturing that moment, jumping in that puddle, taking that opportunity, rather than, you know, you get to have a moment of fun over what. So I think this was such a fun, beautiful piece, and it really does burst with the joy of the moment. So I'm so thankful that they allowed us to share this. And up next, we have a piece by Cornelius Burdine. And Pam, I'll have you take this read, if you would.
All right. Let's Harvest by Cornelius Burdine. And it goes like this. We'll harvest space, leaving hardship we carry, suffocating parental wings, obeyed religious, laced up grace, will sail our life to vary, freed of toughened strings. As winds take the lead, vanilla sails look further south, tears flow our face, we can finally breathe, hearts of joy sing aloud, following the chosen pace. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. Thank you so much. You know, Hotep actually talked about this while he was on the show a little earlier, but sometimes this time of year is not always easy on people. Some people just don't celebrate it the same, or they don't want to celebrate it at all, and that's valid. And I think with this poem, while it's not necessarily related to Christmas and the celebration of it or any holiday, I think what's really beautiful about this is that it was for a show based around the idea of joy. And the beauty of this poem is that it shows that there can still be joy after hardships, that we are not lost to that feeling just because of how we were raised, what we've been through, all this that life has thrown our way. We can still choose to seek it. We can still find bounty in it. And this poem really brings that to life with this beautiful imagery. I mean, there's some very hard images in this, but at the same time, vanilla sails look further south. I mean, that is such a beautiful image to pull to mind. And it pulls in not just this idea of a vanilla wind, but even the scent and the feel of it. And for me, it's that sweet warmth that just kind of comes in the late spring. Tears flow our face. We can finally breathe. Hearts of joy sing aloud, following a chosen pace. Just a reminder that we can reclaim life. We can reclaim joy and beauty and happiness, and that we are only held back by our own, ultimately by our own action or decision to not take. So, or inaction, if you will, our own decision for inaction or action. I think this was just a really phenomenal piece. Challenges the reader to find places that they've given up on and reevaluate to see how they might be able to move forward in those areas or find new joy or new happiness. So I thought it was just marvelous. And having read it, Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I have to say, this is beautiful. I really like how within your comment you focused in on the idea that comes with healing and moving on, and how when we can go through hardships and then, you know, we can make that choice to become our own person, to find happiness, to find a sense of peace. And I definitely saw that too. You know, oftentimes it's extremely difficult when you go through a dark or even like abusive childhoods or time periods in your life. And to try to move on and to try to heal is not easy. What I also really liked about this, right, and there's so much said in not a whole lot of lines, is I like that it touched on the idea that just because you're raised with certain beliefs doesn't mean those have to be your beliefs. Now, I know people who you know, their religion, their beliefs, spiritual beliefs are the ones they were raised with, and that's absolutely fine because sometimes that turns out to be the right choice for us. But there are times when we have to go out into the world and we have to learn to think for ourselves, and we have to learn to say, you know, this is who I am going to be. This is what I believe. This is where I have found my inner peace. And it doesn't have to be where your parents pointed to and said, this is where it is for you. No, you will discover that. And so I really like that within this rite is a wonderful sense of not only the healing that I felt like you were bringing up, but of self-discovery. So just absolutely a wonderful rite and very well done.
Oh, Pam, I absolutely adore that comment too, because you're right. As much as there can be healing, sometimes there's not healing. Sometimes you just move beyond it and become something different and new and better for you. You actually, I've got to pull up a little meme that I can read, because this was actually shared. As some people know, I play Dungeons and Dragons every other week. And we share fun little things together. And Master M is part of my D&D group that plays. And he shared this thing, and he says, your blood relations are just your suggested pre-generated party members. It is perfectly okay to ditch as many of them as you'd like and craft an entire party of lizard folk pyromancers in or whatever suits you. Because isn't that the truth? Sometimes, be it your faith, be it the path that you follow, even careers can sometimes feel like you are born into them and you don't have much choice. And it is perfectly okay and normal to move away from those things and move beyond them and cut those ties, because it's sometimes just your pre-generated party and it's not really where you're meant to be. So I think that was such a phenomenal comment, Pam. Thank you for that. All right, and up next, I'm actually going to have us read Phil's poem. Let me grab that link, and I'll give this one a read. Christmas, Present, Past, and Future by Phil Mayai. Long ago on Christmas Day, a child's wish had come true, a rocking horse to ride upon, tea set and dolly too. Let's not forget the sparkling tree, silver tinsel, and lights aglow. Memories from a distant past, family dinner, and gifts bestowed. Today, Christmas, how it's changed so much, peace and quiet now the norm. Santa has much less to do, gathering hugs both valued and warm. The tree still sparkles in my heart, and the angel watches from above. The nativity now center stage, Christ's birth a reminder of God's love. Christmas of tomorrow, still yet to be seen. May it bring much joy and peace and all that's heartfelt in between. Children grown and healthy, of character honest and strong, setting good examples, living well, living long. End poem. And Pam, could you share your thoughts on this?
Oh, absolutely. I thought this was a wonderful write. You know, I really enjoyed her rhyme and flow. I like how there was a spirituality to this, and a reminder of God's love. But I like how it takes us, like from a mother's point of view, or you know, the how Christmas changes. Like, you know, you remember that the Christmas is childhood. During childhood, you remember the Christmas, you know, when your children are children. And then as everybody starts to grow up, you know, you get each other less and less presents because you all have what you need. And it's not about the presents. It's about spending time together. And I really like this all the way through, but especially when it says children grown and healthy, of character, honest and strong, setting good examples, living well and living long. You know, it just so beautifully reminds us that while it's fun to get those presents, that what the biggest gift is that knowing that you've set that example for your children, and they've grown to be people of strong character and healthy character. So I just think this is beautifully written and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. This really does show the evolution of Christmas. I mean, I remember as a child, I would get so excited. I'd do my homework by the Christmas tree. I would look forward to the joy of seeing what everybody got. And as I've gotten older and, you know, having my own adult money, now it's more that joy of finding the perfect gift for people. I don't need stuff. And that's what I keep telling my family. I don't need stuff. I have the money to buy stuff. If that's what I want. But what I want is those memories, that time together, seeing the joy of my kids, and even Christmas yet to come, what that's going to look like. I like how there's that capturing of the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future from the Christmas Carol even, and how, I don't know if she necessarily intended this, but the first stanza is kind of like an hourglass shape, which almost reminds me of that Christmas is from long ago, the time of Christmas is long ago, and where you are now is being kind of big and encompassing. And then the future is a little bit more narrow than the other two because there's just more to be seen. There's more to grow. It's not yet here. We don't fully know. And I like that about this. I don't know if it was intentional, but if it was, it's genius. But even that feel, capturing the feeling and the struggles and the beauty of each of these moments, a reminder that Christmas evolves, I think is a really beautiful reflection upon this day, because our memories do come from the past, the present, and ideas of what the future may bring. So I thought this was just marvelous. All right, up next, we're going to read a little brevity by me. It kind of deals with memory, so I thought it would be nice, but this is called Christmas Collection, and I'll give this a read. This Christmas, may your heart be filled with joy, just as the box of tissue paper has been filled with ornaments that have become cherished with time. End poem. And Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts? You don't have to, but if you want to, you can.
Oh,
otherwise, we'll move on to your piece.
I absolutely want to. Yes. Absolutely, I want to. And nobody's even, like, I don't know, twisting my arm or anything. I just want to. Well, first of all, kudos on capturing so much in 27 words. You know, this is filled with those kind of wishes that you want everybody to have. You want people to have the kind of happiness that comes from memories. You know, I used to, I would buy my kids a new ornament every year. And as I said, like when we decorated Christmas trees when I was a little, it was a lot of homemade ornaments. But I was very fortunate and blessed in the fact that my paternal grandmother was really big into ceramics. Like she had a kiln. The whole basement was filled with ceramic molds. And so every year she would make the ceramic ornaments and we would get to paint them. And it was such a great childhood memory. But even stuff that's not homemade, like there was many years back when my first two kids were only toddlers, my mother bought me a Christmas train that, you know, it doesn't move or anything. It's just still, but, you know, and it's a snowman one. So it has, like, you know, the engine, the two boxcars, and the cabooses, and there's a snowman in each one. And I still have that to this day. And, you know, it wasn't homemade, but, you know, my mother bought it for me. And it just absolutely, anytime I get a chance to look at it, it brings joy to my heart. And what I like is that in only three lines, you remind people that sometimes it's the simple things that bring the best memories. So just absolutely a wonderful write and very well done, Victoria.
Well, thank you, Pam. This really did spawn last year, just based off of that idea of how each Christmas ornament has its own kind of little memories. Watching my child or children now put them on the tree, or you know, I have a set of three now too, thanks to my youngest, old Christmas just glass that my grandma gave me, and they're the last thing that I have with my grandma, and so. I love your comment because I feel like it really feeds upon the heart of this poem that this time is the memories, be it the ornaments that get to harbor them or the ones that we harbor in our own hearts. So thank you for that stunning comment, Pam. And now to put you on the spotlight again, we're going to read your piece. And then I would love to know what's going on for you the rest of the week.
Okay. All right, sounds good. All right, this is, I think, probably a little sadder and darker, but that's okay. This is Christmas Tree, present, Past, Present, Future. And it goes like this. Christmas past, marking the labyrinth crunch of snow-covered woods, father divining rod to find the tree full of lush branches and a point worthy of an angel, dragged home and fruited with an eclectic display of ornaments, a proud giantess bedecked in strings of garland and lights, a skirted keeper of Christmas wishes wrapped in bows. I am haunted by the nolic ghost of pine perfection. Christmas present. There is no footprints except the ones left to run countless errands. No tree, no decorations, no light, save for the 80 watts of porcelain half globes mounted to the ceiling. The midnight oil eyes that watch me trying to master the art of keeping up on the everyday. I am the keeper of the gifts brought forth from hiding and bestowed to children. Christmas future. What the hell do you think I am? Some bobble-headed fortune teller that can read the palms of overpressed tea leaves for three quarters in a Christmas dance and song? I cannot see the future beyond the dark clouds of now. I can only have the fragile hope of a woman who wonders how many branches must break before she is no longer considered a tree. Even in its ugliest forms, hope is a beautiful thing. End poem.
Oh, Pam, you say that this is a darker right, but I think there's real beauty embedded within this. I loved that idea. So little fun fact, I've never cut down my own Christmas tree. I've always wanted to, but I'm also terrified that there'll be like squirrel or bird nest in the branches. So I love that first memory though. The idea of marching through this labyrinth of trees, the dad looking for that perfect tree. Because while I've never cut down my own, I do remember many times, even when visiting my parents, of going to look at all the different trees and trying to find the one that's full enough and lush enough and doesn't have too many holes. And you never quite realize how many criteria a Christmas tree that you're only going to use for like a month, maybe 6 weeks, eight, if you're super late at taking your tree down. You never quite know how much criteria a tree has to fit to get that. All the while, I think of Charlie Brown's Sad Little Christmas Tree. But that whole thing of getting the tree and even hinting back to the Nordic or Noelic ghosts of pined perfection, all the Christmas trees past that have stood perhaps in that same spot, worn those same ornaments, each one picked as perfect. That's part of the past that we always remember about Christmas. Although I dare say I wish I could have gotten to find my own. I love the present because I actually was talking to my father about this memory before, the idea of the Christmas presents that are hidden out of sight. I remember as a child scouring my own house, trying to find the Christmas presents. And one unfortunate day after playing at my cousin's house, my parents had gone out to buy Christmas presents. My cousins decided that they wanted to sneak home with us, and our genius idea was to stick them in the trunk. I did not know my parents were out buying Christmas presents. I just knew it was a play date with my cousins. And so the trunk pops open and, oh, look at all the toys. And it completely stopped our plan to harbor our cousins away in the trunk of the car, because that's what you do in the 90s.
Oh my God.
80s and 90s, you rode in the trunk. It was fine. It was fine. But I remember that my parents came out and they were like, why did you open the trunk? And it kind of blew up because it was the only time that we found Christmas presents. And I remember the threat they were going to bring them back. And it was heartbreaking. It was, you ruined Christmas. And I was just like, oh, I'm so sad. And I didn't. They didn't bring the presents back. We still got our Christmas presents. And it was a good Christmas. But that stanza vividly reminded me of that. Because so often children do scour for presents. They do look for them. But if they found them, what would happen? Or even the idea of, you know, being, you know, 5, 10, 13, however old, and seeing the presents under the tree and going to shake them to see if you could figure out what they are. That second stanza really reminds me of that. And it reminds us that you are no longer the child following your father, but you are now the keeper of those gifts. You are now the parent that is swirling away those presents to bring about the joy for the children on Christmas. And then Christmas future. I actually really adore this because so often we are called to know everything. You know, how many times has a kid come up to you and just said, you know, why does this happen, mommy? Why does that happen, mommy? And you're supposed to have all the answers. That's what they see us as, the old wise adult that knows everything. And we just don't. And so I like the biting back in this stanza, because not only does it say, I don't know, I can't foresee the future, I am not someone who can be bought to tell you and entertain you, but it also questions how many branches must break before she is no longer considered a tree. How many years will it take where we have whittled away ourselves, removed ourselves from our natural environment, hoping that we will still be just as grand? And it reminds me of the Christmas tree, the one plucked from nature that's been chopped down, be it by your family or from a tree farm. As the days continue on, that tree will lose its needles. As it's ripped through doors that it was never meant to fit through, it will lose branches. And eventually, the tree is not worth more than to throw it in a fireplace. And so I suppose in many ways, there's almost an existential calling in this final stanza about how much longer will I be seen as something of worth, of something of value, and be cherished and not just discarded because now I am too much. I really appreciate those ruminations, because when we take ourselves away from where we are meant to be, from where we are naturally planted, we have those moments where we don't know if we will ever be grand again, and how the worry of how much longer we have till people no longer care to look at us, to see us, and to marvel at what we are. So I think this was actually quite a phenomenal piece, because it plays upon not just memories and moments and joy and emotions, but it also makes us stop and think about our own journey through life as we have aged, and what we lose as we continue on even with everything else that we gain. So I think it was just a marvelous write, Pam.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate that comment. It was beautiful. Yeah, and this was a wonderful show tonight. I enjoyed hanging out with you and all the writes.
Absolutely. It was a little eclectic towards the end, but I think that this was just a really fun show. I am so thankful that you were here. Even Hotep, for while they were here for the little bit that they were, I'm just always so thankful to get to hang out with you because you come with such beautiful comments and insights. And, I mean, if you need a poem in a pinch, Pam's always got something up her sleeve. And you did. You pulled out these two extra beautiful pieces from you and Phil, and I'm so, so thankful for it. This is why I say that Pam is the Kevin of late night poets. She is everywhere and knows everything, and it's great, and I love you for it. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for all the poets that let us read your work. You guys writing in are really what makes these shows happen. So I truly appreciate each and every one of you. And so thank you for coming and joining us today by the fire, reading these stories, sharing these memories, and talking about poetry. And so with that, Pam, what have you got going on the rest of this week?
Well, first of all, I'd like to mention to make sure to everybody check out all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because it's just going to be a wonderful week of shows to inspire. As far as some contests we have coming up, we have, well, Rex, Intimus Rex is running a contest, Putting Your Fun into Christmas After Midnight, that has a variety of just fun, humorous quotes that are, I think are very inspiring. Fill My Eyes is running two contests, one for The Art of Seduction, Naughty, Nice, Somewhere in Between, which I think is another fun one. And then for her Friday show, instead of doing open poetry, she's doing her annual Dear Santa contest, where they're looking for writes that are actually Dear Santa letters. And she's looking for ones that are deep and meaningful and heartfelt. For Into the Darkness, I have a contest running with The Little Match Girl by Hans Christian Andersen as inspiration. So it's going to be a wonderful week of poetry and shows, and I'm looking forward to them all.
Oh, my goodness. I know the Dear Santa last year was just fantastic. So I'm so glad that that's making a return this year. And the rest of those sound so amazing. In fact, as soon as you said The Little Match Girl, I was like, Hans Christian Andersen. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I love him. So I will definitely have to check that out. There are some really awesome contests up right now. We are having a special episode of the Black Lace Diaries on Wednesday. So come join me and Master M to see what has put people on the naughty list. I know that Phil's is kind of anywhere and in between, but this is definitely those moments where perhaps you made Santa blush. So check that out, and we will be sure to see you there. A little fun, right?
Absolutely.
So with that, I am going to say once again, thank you everyone that wrote in for the show. Pam, thank you for joining me. As always, you are just an absolute delight, and I just love your intellectual comments. It always brings a vibrancy to the show that I adore and I appreciate. So until next time, everyone, I hope you have a wonderful week. Good night.